Welcome to Wheel to Wheel, the premier Formula One podcast by two disappointed tifosi who know medium to nothing about Formula One.
In a race that made Mattia Binotto leave the pit wall, we saw Ferrari snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, Max put in a patient performance to the top, and Hamilton make his way to the podium.
Non va bene, Ferrari.
Non va bene,
non
yeah.
Va bene.
Zaylee, do you want to tell the fans about how you spent some time in Italy? I feel like that's relevant.
Yeah, that's a story for a different day. Today, I'm not even proud of that because Ferrari literally made a shit show out of what could have been an amazing race for them. I'm shocked and astonished and appalled. And I came to this podcast. I know we got some headlines to get through, but I was thinking of you this whole race because I'm just like, we've had discussions about Ferrari before. And I feel like you've been, like, trying to give them the benefit, the Benny of the D in terms of, like, how much criticism, basically how much storyline that we are giving, attributing to Ferrari based on some of their actions. People obviously have different conspiracy theories about, you know, Team what's culture. Actually going on the pit wall during those races. And I've said that it's, like, more dramatic, more contentious, blah, blah, blah. And like, I think it's fine. And like, I'm curious, coming away from this race, do you feel like there's more going on? Do you feel like, what do you think?
I don't know. I feel like the tension of the team is actually what's the least clear to me. I think the decision making is very clearly bad, but there's so many moments where I'm like, I don't quite understand the vibes. Whereas if you look at the Mercedes garage and the Mercedes pit lane, when something happens, you see they're all like either angry, tossing headphones, whatever it is. For Ferrari, it's very like straight faced. You guys can't see, but I'm doing like a straight face. And so that's what like that's the part of the chaos that I don't see. I think, but I do think behind the scenes there must be chaos because things are not. It's getting scary. It's getting very scary.
There's
scary hours.
Remember we talked about the ice in their veins reaction where they all freeze up? They're terrified. I think those straight faces are all just like, we're about to, all right, so we're about to die. Y'all, I have COVID right now. You might hear my
sounds like
throat.
A smoker.
I mean, not that I'm not a smoker, but also, yes, I very much have COVID. Okay. So, anything else though? Any big updates this week?
There are not too many updates. I'm gonna keep the headlines short because I feel like we have so much to talk through for the race. A couple things that I thought were interesting this week. Michael Massey came out a little bit. I don't know if you realize he's moved to Australia. He's from Australia, but I think was living abroad. Moved to Australia post leaving as the head of the FIA or race director, whatever. He said that he told a news publication, like the most hated man in the world. He got death threats. People were saying they were going to come after him and his family. Racist. I was like, what race are you? Isn't he just white?
No, maybe they're calling him racist.
Oh. The messages were shocking, racist, abusive, vile. They called me every name under the sun. Okay, so maybe they called him racist. And they also came to his LinkedIn and Facebook.
I have heard that Daniel Ricciardo will respond on LinkedIn.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so I guess certain people are like more on it than others, which
Wait,
is kind of funny.
Hilarious.
Pierre Gasly's probably liking stuff on LinkedIn as we speak.
Dude.
That's really sad, but I also think that this was always part of the plan, that they were going to like reassign Michael Massey and then he was going to leave halfway through the season, because there's just no sustainable way, right, that he continues in the sport, right? Like, who would we work with?
No, I think he's been blackballed, which is what he's saying without saying it. And I think the move to Australia does feel very like I'm escaping like the politics and pressure of the EU.
For sure.
Another interesting piece of news. Sergio Perez will enter a team in the UIM E1 World Championship, which is an all-electric race boat series. Yeah. He'll enter with Team Mexico. It's an inaugural championship. He was working with the co-founder, Alejandro Agag, who helped to establish Formula E, other teams, and also worked with him back in 2010. So he's going to be a team leader for e-boat racing.
Is that just a passion project, or does he make money off of that?
I'm sure he's going to make money off of it, but I'm like, I still don't understand what he's not going to be in the boat racing. So I'm like, what is your?
It's an electric boat racing. Okay, but not like virtual.
It's like, I think people are in the boat.
Okay.
That's actually a great question.
Okay. As long as they're in the boat, because I feel like virtual boat racing is a bit, that's strange.
It's giving father who's retired as a sport. And the last bit of news that is probably the most interesting and, you know, important, Sebastian Vettel has retired from Formula One. He's announced his retirement at the end of the season.
I have to admit that, like, that didn't hit as hard for me because I didn't grow up with him. I could see that people were really, really emotional, and I don't even want to pretend like I'm a part of that legacy of, like, kids who grew up watching him win four championships. That just wasn't me.
But maybe you might be more interested to hear he's finally on Instagram. That's the other piece of news. Maybe that's more relevant to you.
And everyone was so excited about the fact that he had joined. What do you think are the circumstances of his leaving? Do you think that he was planning to retire, or do you think that he was disappointed with Aston Martin's progress this season and was ready to leave?
I think he may have been gearing up to leave. It's interesting. I feel my sense of older racers is that they kind of have like a 3 to 4 year like sort of window where they're like, all right, around this time is probably when I'm going to exit the sport. I'm wondering if Hamilton is in that right now. And I feel like when you're in that window and things are not going well, you're like, okay, now I know it's time to wrap it up earlier. So I feel like it's kind of a combination of both. Like, he's older, he's been in the sport for ages, Aston Martin's not doing the best or whatever, it's just okay. So I feel like it's just a good time for him to bow out.
It is crazy to me that he's younger than Lewis Hamilton and not that much older than Daniel Ricciardo. I know. And for him to retire first, if I were Seb, I would be thinking about my career relative to Lewis. And not even so much in terms of just on paper accomplishments, but also like, what have I, do I feel like I've achieved what I needed to achieve
in this sport?
He strikes me as extremely mature in the way he thinks. Like, I think he's not devastated about his retiring, but he is into Formula One history. Like, he is a buff in terms of those things. And I wonder if he thinks, like, I could have made more of a mark. Or if he just, I don't know. Goodbye, Seb. We love you.
Bye, Seb. I can't wait to read his tell-all.
Moving into the race. Here's what I have to say about just the way the race felt, separate from all the drama of today, just hungry, hungry, hungry feelings. Okay. I felt as though the Hungaro Ring, it felt like a really great finale before the summer break. Like, this whole time we've been like, what's the summer break? When is the summer break coming?
I know, and that's so true. Like, week. As if we were racing in the car. When's the summer break coming?
Like, damn, so we're exhausted. When is the summer break coming? This felt like we are at the finale of the first half of the season. It felt like if we were on, you know, in TV, we would be at the mid-season break. This is the, you know, the mid-season finale. Like, it really did feel it was long enough. So it was 70 laps. It's like a short circuit. But still, the fact that there were 70 laps meant that the race went on for a pretty long time. And I know we're coming back to Spa in 4 weeks. It just felt good to be here. And I didn't know going into it how difficult it was. I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too. To your point, Zaylee, the track has a bunch of different elevations, so like that was part of it. It felt a little bit like a roller coaster. Look, I've been trying to get in my different elevation comment, okay? And it felt like a roller coaster ride, and that's what made it fun to me. And also just we saw, every time I talk about the track, I know I sound like a freaking idiot because I'm like, the shapes are fun.
No, yeah.
But it literally was. Like, if you looked at the map, there were so many windy corners. It was fun. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was a fun track.
I guess because we're just more adept at Formula One and our Formula One knowledge, but they were like, okay, the run down towards turn one is really long. So you have this long straight, but it's not so easy to overtake. It's not as easy as you would think because blah, blah, because there's these hard braking turns and it's very narrow. And I was just like, this circuit is very well crafted. I don't know what the history is here. Probably shouldn't say that on this podcast, but I don't. Hungaro Ring, it sounds like very important, Hungaro, and like it was made for racing, and I wouldn't be surprised if that was so, because it really felt like it had been designed for these men to like really show their chops. Yeah, and women, I don't know.
Yeah, people of all colors, creeds,
whatever.
And the other just general, I feel like, Hungarian Grand Prix comment we have to make is that George was on pole this race.
George was on pole this race. I wasn't that happy about it.
I just felt that it was, well, okay, I didn't watch the quali, so I, you know, the last two I actually did watch, which I was, I've been happy about, but it did feel like for me as a bystander almost, I was on Twitter and I was like, bah!
It was out of freaking way. And on triple on top of nowhere, out of nowhere, because Mercedes was nowhere. They were so lost. They had the worst free practice of this entire season. Everyone was like, what's going on with Mercedes? Like, they were running around, couldn't get the tires in the right window. Apparently, they were up all night, like,
not up all night.
Literally up all night working. I had to see if they broke curfew, because I know you can only break curfew like mm-hmm. 3 times a season. I should check if they did. But it was like a shite weekend for Mercedes. Really, really bad. And then George made it to pole, and Lewis was in 7th. And Lewis complained that his DRS wouldn't open.
Hmm.
So Lewis had some technical difficulties, again, I guess.
Again, this season with the DRS flap.
Mm-hmm. And I think he was annoyed because he just had this sentiment of, like, in his interviews being like, you know, we all stayed up all night. Kind of like, we uh-oh. All did the work. And, like, only George got to be on pole. He was like, we all could have been fighting for first or whatever kind of energy.
That's interesting, because from the Twitter sphere, what I've been seeing is, like, I think, you know, George made a tweet about, this is great, when he was on pole. And Hamilton retweeted it. And then all of, like, the ham stands were like, you see? This is what we're talking about. Like, we... Of course he's going to be happy for George. Like, don't listen to the haters talking about, you know, whatever, just yeah. getting up people's ass about yeah. the fact that Lewis wasn't supportive. They're like, he is supportive of George. Yeah. Da, da, da.
No, he's definitely quote-unquote supportive. Quote-unquote supportive.
But all of Formula One is reading in between the lines. Oh,
it's reading in between the lines and the retweets. It's very, the track very limits. Nuanced. Yeah. Because I also think there's a really full-throated way to be really supportive of someone who just got their first pole of their career. And I don't think we saw that from Lewis this weekend. Being like, it's his first pole, blah, blah, blah. They're not going to do that this, like, whole season. Yeah.
First, huh?
It's just like, literally. And what else happened in qualifying? Carlos out-qualified Charles for the third time in 2022.
I had a conspiracy theory in my head. This race where, remember last week we talked about how Ferrari was like, we're not prioritizing one driver over the other, where, like, you know, viewers probably watching are like, duh, why wouldn't you prioritize Charles? I'm like, are they, like, slyly starting to, like, focus
prioritize
more?
Carlos?
I don't know, like, just trying to focus more on Carlos and his car development. And it was just a thought I had while watching this race today, because they had some weird funky pit strategy as per usual. I don't want to get too much into it, but just a thought where I'm like, could Carlos now win this championship for Ferrari between the two?
Stop.
I don't know, man.
Okay, well, honestly, I do think it's a toss-up. You brought up last week that Mattia wasn't specifically focusing on one driver over another, and I was like, I think it's still a toss-up, because they don't know which car is going to be out due to reliability issues every single freaking weekend. I think it's more they don't really know than it
not
would
that
seem, but
not,
I don't think. Right? I don't know. I don't know. What else happened? Oh, Sergio Perez came in 10th and barely made it into Q2. Got his lap time deleted. So they were like, oh my God, he's not going to make it into Q3. And then it turned out his lap time wasn't deleted. So they were like, oh, you can keep putting in laps. But then he, like, went even slower. And it turned out that his true pace was in 11th. And Max Verstappen wasn't, like, it was just a bad qualifying for Red Bull, like, worse than we've ever seen in a weekend.
The words true pace for some reason, like, make me giggle. I don't know why, but something about that is so funny. Your true pace. But also, to your point about Red Bull's weekend, Max had a little hissy fit on the radio, or maybe it wasn't even on the radio. I think it was afterwards, talking about how the people watching the race are kind of like treating the drivers like amateurs, like, I don't know, the people who judge the race, or like the stewards, I guess. He was just really complaining about this season's treatment of the drivers.
Did you see that video of them voting during a team driver meeting on something?
No, the drivers?
Yeah, I don't know how these videos leak, and I don't know why we can't see the full video. They weren't talking. They were just like handing in their voting slips. They were all filling in. It was like Hamilton on one side. All the difficult people were still filling it out and like reading very closely between the lines. And then everyone else was like going up to the big top front of the classroom and handing their slips in.
That is quite literally the funniest thing I've ever heard. Hold on, I'm watching it right now.
But I'm sure this generation of drivers is making a lot of decisions because they're all very involved in the stewardship of the sport.
I know, and perhaps too involved. I feel like the old heads of the sport might be like, when we drove, half of us died in the car and no one complained, like, whatever.
Yeah. These are millennials. We all have opinions. It's like millennials and younger, so they're all revolutionaries, little revolutionaries.
So true. Inspiring. Shall we get into the race? Into the race?
Yeah, let's get into the race.
Do you want to do the 60-second thing?
No.
Okay.
Because it's too hard. I had suggested that we try to summarize the race in 60 seconds, but now it's looking very daunting based on just the first few notes that I have here. I tried to organize this in terms of story.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at
it too. My first story here is teammate drama at the start. So George goes in the soft tire. He gets away well. He's one of the only drivers on softs. Everyone else has chosen medium. The Pirelli guy, did you see this during the track walk? The Pirelli guy was recommending which tires to start.
No.
He was like, I suggest medium, medium. He was basically suggesting a two-stop to everyone. He's not the most charismatic with his press, but he was like, medium, medium, soft, or medium, hard. But based on the track temperatures, whatever, hard was not the way to go today. And we saw that. We learned that very quickly. So people were just choosing to go either medium, medium, soft, or medium, soft, or blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. George decides to go soft at the start, which is kind of risky. But I guess they wanted him to be way ahead of the mediums behind and give him a chance at winning the race. Sainz covers off his teammate Charles so aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
No real consequences to that, but just pointing that out, that he immediately went to doing that, even though he's not ahead in the championship. And I would think at this stage in the season, he would kind of get out the way on his own accord.
Not the way Ferrari's running that team. They're like, look, if you can get ahead of Charles, I won't say no. We're not going to stop you.
And Ocon does the same thing to Alonso. And Alonso gets really upset, and he says, never, never in my life I saw the face like I saw on today. Never.
Drama.
That's a lie.
I know. Ocon
has definitely defended like that. He's like, I've never seen it in my life. It's like, yeah, because you're the one. You're the main one who does this shit. I couldn't believe that comment. He's like, never in my life.
No, you've seen it. It's happened. In fact, you've done it.
No, it's happened. And so you know who gets ahead of those two Alpines who are fighting? Hamilton does. Which is so amazing for him. And probably that start is like part of the reason why he ended up on the podium today. And I thought that was really cool. And then just bringing this up, because I don't think there's like another place for it, but I noted that Daniel Ricciardo got ahead of the Alpines in lap 24.
Yes, that was so cool.
Because of the same issue.
That was so cool.
Bro, I'm not giving Daniel any.
I liked it. I was just like, this is these two, like, yo, actually, I was going to say something out of pocket. It's like they're two bickering in the corner, and I just like that he was able to be like, all right, I'm just going to sneak by really quickly. But Alonso, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, on Daniel's own merit, I feel like it's hard to find an overtake that, like, you know, like, if they weren't beefing, like, would
that have happened?
Taking two cars. Yeah, like, oh, no.
One thing I noticed about this race was that a lot of the maybe this is common of, like, cars in the midfield and also in the back, but, like, they really stay in, like, packs of two, 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 two. Like, especially I was looking at, like, the Haas and the Williams, Schumacher and Magnussen, but they weren't doing very well. But just, like, they stay in these, like, groupings of two, and so it's funny to see when Alonso and Ocon are like bickering, because it's just like, you guys are just gonna stay in the back anyway, so doesn't really matter. Did you notice how they were talking about how there's three British drivers in the top five? Did you hear that comment?
Yeah,
this is around lap 11.
I mean, like, we just want to fly the British flag for a moment. Like, they were so proud.
And throughout all of this, like, for a while, Russell is putting in really good work at the front. Like, he's able to like extend his lead.
He is, but the Ferraris are fast behind.
Yeah.
And it's pretty foreboding. Max is, this is like the beginning of Max's charge. Max gets through past Fernando and he almost gets past Ocon very quickly. Perez does the same thing. Around laps 10 and 11 is when the Lewis Hamilton sandwich, this was the first like stressful part of this race. I was like, oh, this race is getting good. We're lap 10 and there's already this sandwich with Lando in front, Lewis in fifth, not in front. Lando's in fourth, Lewis is in fifth, Verstappen's in sixth, and they just start like duking it out for track position.
Did you hear the comment? This is another good Formula One-ism that I've learned, and I just loved it. They were like, it's a do or be done moment. I was like, yes, that's so good. There's so many do or be done moments in life. I was just like, that's good advice.
Do or be done.
Do or be done.
They were saying that comes from kart racing, which I want my baby to be in kart racing. It just sounds like the most fun. And also, like, it's a transferable skill if there's all these anaphorisms. Is that a word?
I have no idea.
If there's all these, like, you know, words and phrases and life lessons that come out of it, it's a do or be done moment. He'll know that from his track racing days, you know? Anyways, yeah, and Lewis does, or he was about to be done.
So he did.
He did. He overtakes Lando just in time for Verstappen not to get him. So Max isn't getting past Lewis. His front left is graining. It's starting to get stressful for him. He has a sensor fail issue, which sensor fail. So let's have a teachable moment, because sensor fails have been happening a lot, and we never explain stuff on this podcast. Why?
Because we don't know anything about anything until we look it up. But go ahead. Do you know what it is? Because I don't.
I do. Or someone actually taught me this in the context of their Toyota, but I was like, oh, this is that Formula One. This is Formula One. But basically, like, sensors on the car tell you a bunch of stuff, blah, 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 that's going on. It helps the car work because it's sensing certain things that it needs to work. And you, on a Formula One car, there's so many sensors. And when one sensor fails in Formula One, it starts giving the car the wrong directions. And so that's why they tell the drivers, like, fail sensor one. Like, basically, tell the car that sensor one, for example, has failed. And so that it stops using that, because we have so many sensors on the car that if one or two sensors fail, it's fine. But if the car doesn't know that the sensor is failing, then that's bad news.
Oh.
So that's why all the time they'll be like, all right, fail sensor 16, fail sensor whatever. And that way the car will actually run better, because the car won't be taking misdirections from the sensor.
Interesting. Okay. I didn't know that.
That was cool, though, because, like, it's just, I don't know, good context. So anyway, that's why it's like a kind of an issue, but not that big of an issue. When Max was like, this isn't working. And they're like, oh, because the sensor is failing. Like, your car is being misdirected. Anyway, I have this section that's called A Dummy's Guide to Boxing. Okay. Because then comes the dummy boxing. So Science says, this is what you're talking about with Ferrari's like weird call to bring Science in. It's like they tell Science to box. They tell Science to box and Science doesn't box.
Yep, Verstappen and Russell Pitt in response to that.
What did you think of that? Did you think that Sainz was supposed to box?
No, I thought that they were purposefully trying to mislead people. But it is weird, because almost immediately after those two boxed, then Sainz came into the pits. And so I feel like it was I feel like they were trying to do, like, I don't know if it's an overcut or an undercut. It did feel like a little almost accidental, but I'm going to say that it wasn't.
Because of the way Sainz was acting at the start of the race and just the energy, I thought they told him to box to avoid actually telling the drivers to trade places on track. I thought they might have been trying to get Leclerc ahead of him in strategy, and Sainz was like, no, I'm not boxing yet, because that will put me behind Leclerc. I thought that was just my instinct watching the race. I was like, why do I feel like he's ignoring their call? Because he wanted not to lose a track position to Leclerc in the pits, because he was ahead of Leclerc at that point.
I don't know. And it was also a slow stop on top of that. So I'm like, if
that was the thing, even if it was a dummy, it didn't even work because so they call signs in, he doesn't box. And so George comes in, which is fine because George is on those softs and his tires are basically done anyway. And then signs comes in and he has a 3.7 second stop. So the dummy doesn't work anyway. And then what ends up happening is that Leclerc does an overcut on signs. So he goes so fast on his new tires that he ends up in second, Sainz ends up in third, mm-hmm. which is what the team wanted all along. They, like, needed that because Leclerc was going mad fast. And, yeah, he was just the faster driver on track. Then at lap 32, George concedes the lead. Mm-hmm. But he held on.
I'm telling you, I think he was doing really well in the front. I think it was only a matter of time with Charles on fresher tires. I understand why mm-hmm. this happened. The slow-mo on Toto's face, did you see that? Killed me. They're an expressive-ass garage. That is what I can get behind. He was like... pissed. Hilarious.
It also doesn't help that he's like... He's so buff.
I know.
In the gym, and he's so big. And he looks like... I don't know. It's just... He looks like a character.
Yeah.
So behind George and Leclerc are Sainz, who's much slower than his teammate now, and Verstappen, and Hamilton, who now has the best pace, but others are starting to match mm-hmm. him. And I was kind of annoyed at this point because also the broadcast was bad today. We haven't even discussed that, but they were fully talking about things that weren't up on the screens. Mm-hmm. The graphics weren't working at the beginning. But also, they have to tell us, like, oh, Hamilton's going really fast at this point. And I'm like, why aren't there lap times on the screen? Like, how hard would it be to add another tab that's just, like, how fast they're going and the most recent lap?
They were referencing a lot of times that were not on the screen. You're so right about that. Whoa.
And I was just like, this would be so good to just know at all times in the race. Because then we can be like, oh, this person's really making a charge. We can just see it for ourselves. Anyways, so the Alpines I just wrote this down that they were in 10th and 12th at this point when they started in 5th and 6th.
That kills. But they were struggling on those hard tires, which is why that Ferrari decision to go on to hards was so perplexing.
So stupid.
Because what are we doing? Like, have you not been watching what else has been happening?
Yeah. Red Bull then takes control. And do you know that Red Bull's head of strategy is a woman?
I heard this. I thought it was another team. I thought it was Alpine or something, or Aston Martin. But it's Red Bull?
It is really cool because Red Bull, this whole time I've been like, whatever. I guess this is my race takeaway, and so I'll just talk about it later. But mm-hmm. Red Bull is so good at strategy. And they basically they're controlling the race at this point. Like, Max isn't first, and yet... They go for the undercut, they put everybody under pressure, and then everybody has to start pitting. So, like, Max comes in, and then Russell comes in, mm-hmm. and Leclerc comes in. Russell comes back behind both Red Bulls, and Ferrari pits Leclerc onto hard. First of all, you didn't even have to pit Leclerc. Like, to cover off that strategy, you could have pit Carlos. That's the part that's just astounding to me.
Yeah, because Sainz's tires were also older done. And needed to be pit. Yeah.
They were four laps older. Like, there's no world in which any of this makes sense. It doesn't make sense. And, like, everyone always says, oh, the Formula One teams know best. There's so much strategy behind them. People have even commented on our videos, like, what do you think, you know more than 1,000 people back at a factory? But it's like, in this case, what could possibly be the Ferrari argument? Like, what could it possibly be? And I know that they will have a media message. But
that's what I'm saying, too, is, like, a little bit, I don't see, they're not very clear with the media in terms of, like, what their big strategy is. Like, when pressed, mm-hmm. I feel like Matteo doesn't say much. Like, he doesn't actually give us good, tangible, interesting things that clarify decision making. It is only more mm-hmm. and more obscure.
And Mattia, did you see that he was on the race? Like, he spoke during the race.
Yes, today. But did you see how, like, for the first time they were like, Mattia? Mattia was silent.
Yes.
Silence.
Literally, it was giving Ted Kravitz. I was like, Mattia? No, but that was the energy. Like, something's up with Mattia today. Like, I don't think he was ready to speak today. And he didn't have much to say.
He didn't.
He had even less to say than Gunther would.
Oh, my God.
He was, like, really mincing his words. Yeah. Like, he wasn't saying much at all. Mm-hmm. He was relying on that Italian accent to, like, hide what he was saying. Ferrari pits Leclerc onto hards. He's wobbling around on these hards, which we already know don't work. He winds up behind Sainz and Hamilton. Verstappen comes out into fifth, and talk about teammates up at Red Bull. Mm. Perez gets right out of his way. He goes into fourth and overtakes Charles Leclerc because Charles Leclerc is a sitting duck because he can't maneuver on those damn hard tires. The only basically saving grace and like a little bit of, you know, the Tifosi, they got a glimpse of hope today because Max did a little spin.
Oh my God, 360. Yeah.
Which was fire.
It was actually crazy he was able to control. It was like, boop, but then he just kept going.
Literally. Yeah. No, it was so, that was like the best
spin that you've seen.
Yeah. And that wasn't the first one this season, but it was definitely the best.
And it won't be the last.
And it probably won't be the last. But this one was tight. I can't imagine a better spin than that. And I want to see a picture because I saw there was smoke going up.
Whoa.
Now Russell is behind Leclerc. Like, Leclerc is just sitting there and people are just zooming past him. It's really, really, really sad. So then Ferrari pulls Sainz in to cover off Hamilton at this point. Like, they're like, I guess because they, in their heads, in their stupid strategy heads, they're like, okay, Leclerc is running this race and Sainz is running this race. It's Leclerc against Max and it's Sainz against Hamilton. And they don't understand the dynamics of like how the race is changing and moving. So they're like, Max comes in, then Leclerc comes in because that's just his race. You know how people like divide it up like that. Mm-hmm. But in this case, like, whatever. So because Hamilton comes in, then they pull Sainz in. And how long was the stop? The stop was 4.6 seconds, bro. The stop is like literally almost a 5-second stop. And the crazy part about it is that it could have been quicker.
Of course.
But they were all standing there and they just didn't release
the button. Yeah, use the button thingy.
Two of the stops today, they were just standing there looking at each other like, who presses this button?
It's not good. It's not good.
Leclerc boxes again. So now he's done three pit stops in one race. He went medium, medium, hard, and now he's going on to softs. It's just like a pit stop is 20 seconds and you're gonna pit three times. You're gonna pit a world championship contender three times. When's the last time somebody's like, when is the last time an efficient pit stop strategy has been to pit three times? If it wasn't like, you know, a safety car or like, you know, some reason where you get a free pit stop, like why would you ever in a race even need to pit three times?
Horrible decision. Both Leclerc and Sainz post-race were like, we are completely puzzled and confused by the strategy. Like, it's interesting to see how they're stepping away from the team, in a sense. Mm-hmm. I think they have to, because at this point, it's like, I couldn't defend those actions, and neither could they. But I just am wondering what it's going to be like at home. Like, tensions are rising.
Yeah, they both got them 5-year contracts, so
it's just about to get real stuck awkward. There, yeah.
Low-key. Yeah. I don't know. This is the same thing that... this is the same thing that Vettel was doing and he got fired, but it's like they're not gonna fire them if they I guess take a united front. So I'm curious about what they'll do with two people who are saying bad things about, because no one speaks bad against Ferrari. No one. We'll see.
Okay, moving along. At this point of the race, Hamilton is also leading. No, because
Hamilton is on softs, he's flying, he's a second and a half faster,
and George is also putting in purple laps as well, like at the around this part of the race. Yeah.
Hamilton overtakes Sainz, he overtakes Russell, it makes it look pretty easy. Toto's like smiling on the cams. Bottas retires randomly with two laps to go. Did you see that?
Yeah, and I thought Guan Yu also retired. No, just Bottas.
I don't think so.
I think you're right. It was just Bottas.
But it was really sad just to see, like, he had two laps left. He could have finished the Grand Prix, and now he, like, I don't know. It just sucks. And then the last overtake was Hamilton on Russell, his own teammate. Super good one, too.
Do or be done, baby.
Yeah, people, I don't like that. I saw on social media people were like, oh, and then the team did a switcheroo. And I was like, that's not what that was.
I thought
that was an overtake on merit, for sure.
I think so, too.
That's what I've got for the race. Those were my big things for the race. Ferrari is a shite show. Like, literally a shit show.
All right, so then we have the final standings for the Hungarian Grand Prix. Max in first, Lewis in second, George in third, Carlos in fourth. Fifth is Sergio with Charles Leclerc in sixth. So that's probably not what Ferrari thought would happen at the end of the day. But takeaways. Do you have the best radio commentary, Zaylee?
Yeah, I put Ferrari will need to add this to a long list of question marks in terms of strategy. And I was just like, yep, this is another question mark. That team got a bunch of question marks to sort through. That was a good ass comment.
That was good. I have one too. Give me a second to find it. Oh, this is when Mattia walks off from the pit wall into the garage. And Ted Kravitz says, I wouldn't be surprised if he's going in early into the summer holiday so he doesn't have to do interviews.
Yeah.
Do you have a driver of the day?
Driver of the day, that's a good one. I don't know. I don't have one yet. Do you have one in mind?
Honestly, Lewis or George for me. Like, I feel like it's been a while since I've had something to root for with Mercedes. I mean, I know that George has been doing well, but it's a special, special feeling when Lewis gets to second. And I think you're right. The ending was done. The overtake was done on merit. So it was just nice to see.
I'm going to give it to Max. I thought Max had a really good drive today. I love how he not came out of nowhere, but super patient, didn't rustle anyone's feathers. And I thought he was aggressive when he needed to be. I liked his overtake when I think it was like on an out lap. He had just come out and he was sort of fighting with Leclerc, and it was a little taste of the younger Max. Mm. He got his wheels out and kind of edged Leclerc out a bit further than he needed to be. But it also was giving that Max wanted to win today.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he had to approach the race like that. I think he could have settled for third and been like, good recovery, or settled for fifth even and taken his flowers. But I think it's a good race. It just gave championship. He's a champion. Maya's rolling her eyes because she just can't stomach Max.
I don't.
I'm sorry to tell you, he's a good winner. I'm sorry to tell you. Even the way that he deals with media afterwards and the way that he deals with the podium, it's just like, it's not too much. He's just like, thanks, y'all. Yeah, it's good. It's good. I don't mind him. I'm saying it could be a worse winner. Aside from all the racism and the abuse and, like, the weird stuff going on with his family.
Okay, and in terms of takeaway, I don't really have one today. I mean, I probably will think of one, but do you have one ready?
Yeah, I have so much to say about Ferrari.
Okay.
I've already said a lot about Ferrari. Which is that, but I just feel like in terms of the PR crisis, mm-hmm. First of all, I feel like I can see the PR strategy at work with Ferrari being like, okay, we're going to have Mattia on during the race today. And he's going to be on, we need to be on our P's and Q's during the race. And Mattia's going to come on and talk to Crofty and whoever else is commentating today. And then the fact that he couldn't even answer the call when they called in the panic of it. I'm just like, you cannot PR your way out of this crisis. Like, y'all need to actually deal with the endemic issue at the root of the problem with this team. And then on top of that, they had Sainz on during the pre-race show, which is just like, it's funny to me that they think that, like, this is how PR is done, too. It's like, oh, okay, let's, like, line up these interviews and let's get these quotes in. But they have Sainz on during the pre-race show in an interview with that Indian commentator. I guess it's rude that I call him that every time, but I can't think of his name. And he's, like, asking him questions. He's like, people seem to think that there's chaos on the Ferrari team radio. And I just, like, I can't understand why. I would rather have those conversations on the radio than not. And it's completely normal. And these are the conversations that are going on all the time. And it's like, your radio literally sounds like, you know what I mean? Like, y'all are panicking every race and, like, yelling at each other. And it's so clear that there's chaos. And then for them to come on with these, like, suave comments, I'm just like, you're messing with our intelligence here. There's so much more going on in this team, and, like, everyone can understand. And then also for Mattia to walk away from the pit wall at the most
crucial,
you know,
time.
Dire, crucial point at this race when you just decided to put this man in a three pit strategy, like, which isn't even a real strategy. Like, and then also part of the commentary this week was like, okay, so they essentially boxed themselves in by putting Leclerc on two mediums at the start. Why was he brought in so early on those mediums? No idea. No answer.
A lot of it not can't be explained, but a lot of it feels like it can't be explained, and that's a very big problem for a sport in which, like, everything has to be formulaic. Like, it's not, like, it's hard. You can't really shoot from the hip with this, especially if you're not, like, you're not in the car. Like, there's one thing for your driver and you use your driverly instincts, but no, Yalho is back on the pit lane and the pit wall. Like, there has to be a reason. It can't just be like, we think this may be best. There's no maybe in this sport. There's no maybe. It is or it isn't. Do or be done, baby. That's it.
Yeah. I'm like, how often does a comfort break happen for a team principal? You can't not pee for 2 hours.
You would never
not
see
even 2 hours. The race is like an hour and 15 minutes.
Toto would never.
Like, unless he has a UTI, there's no reason why he needed to walk away from the wall at that moment. And the craziest part is, like, what did he walk in there to do? To yell? The same way that Charles Leclerc was last week?
I don't know.
Like, what? If it's not that, and he just walked away at that crucial moment to, like, do or say something, it's also, like, this speaks to exactly what's going on in your team, which is, like, these private outbursts of, like, that nothing can be said in the media, but, like, that's literally happening. Like, we can see it. The finger-wagging video of him, like, yelling at Charles Leclerc right after a race, like, it's too much. Mm-hmm. It's, like, the jig is up on Ferrari. They're so weird. They're so weird. And I also wrote down that just, like, I used to think that other people weren't as good as Red Bull with when it comes to strategy, because it was Mercedes last year where Red Bull was constantly beating them on strategy, and now it's this year, and now I'm starting to think that Red Bull is just really good at strategy, which would make sense because they have a woman in charge. Shout out Hannah Schmitz.
You go, Hannah.
Thanks, Hannah. And also another woman, her last week in F1, Bernie Collins.
Yes, I heard strategy. That. You go, yeah. Bernie. I hope you have a nice vacation.
Bernie is such a cute name, too.
It is.
We should have Bernie on. So this is the last race before summer break. We already said that. But the next race is Spa. Some of the drivers were talking about their plans after summer break. George apparently has to do 24 fewer days. He lost a lot of training time this season.
Oh, what's that?
He's done 24 fewer days of training than normal. I think because apparently the Mercedes press schedule is so intense and way more than he's used to, which I could totally get. But so he wants to train over summer break. Lewis said the same. He's like, I'm obviously training.
I know. Now. I was like, you guys are so boring. Just someone say they're going to freaking watch Netflix. No one will do it.
Oh, Lando will. Lando will be on Twitch for the next 2 weeks.
He's going to be on Twitch. I love that. I love when he's off work, he's off. Forget it. All right. So you know who's going to take a really long summer break?
Who?
Sebastian Vettel. And that leads us into our game. So we're going to do a Sebastian Vettel retirement announcement themed Mad Libs. And Zaylee's given me a list of names, numbers, adjectives, nouns, all of the grammatical elements. So we have this story that I have written.
Here it goes.
Here it is.
By the way, Maya doesn't know this, but a lot of these words were inspired by Beyonce's new album.
Oh my God, that's so good.
So I'm curious to see how this collaborates with the Mad Libs.
Okay.
I haven't heard this though. Let's go.
What a journey. Sebastian Vettel has announced his retirement after 87 thick years in Formula One. The sport won't be the same without his soul. Longtime competitor Beyonce had this to say. Seb is a true energy. He taught me how to groove and move. He always remembered to bring taupe aliens as gifts at the holiday party. Seb himself says, bitch, it's bittersweet, but I can't wait to get back home so I can cuff with my superstars.
Perfect.
That's good.
You know, we've done one of these before, and I just don't like Mad Libs that much, but I always enjoy them more than I think I will.
It's more fun to hear.
I was complaining about this.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I was just like, I don't want to do this.
Zaylee's not a literary guy. She doesn't like madness.
No, but it's not a game. To be fair, it's not a game. It's more of like a bonding.
It's an exercise.
It's like an exercise, yeah. But this one was really good, though.
It actually feels like it could be something.
And I love that it's really themed.
It is themed. And someone should take this and make a fan fiction off of it. Just saying.
Don't bring that community into this podcast. We're already beefing with the fan fiction community too much.
Okay, well, that's all I have for you today, folks.
That's all we've got. See you next time. Mwah. Amazing, amazing race.
Mwah. Listen to Beyonce's album.
Oh, yeah. Listen to that.